This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me is Darius Thomas.
Water is so underrated. Have you ever wondered what it takes to break into sports broadcasting? Now ask yourself, where are you willing to start? In the dynamic world of sports media, few stories resonate as powerfully as that of Serenity Douglas. Former All-American track athlete at the University of Texas, turned passionate sports broadcaster and media influencer. Her journey from an eager intern to a recognized voice in sports showcases the relentless pursuit of dreams and the importance of mentorship and maximizing your experience to shape a successful career. So I'm going to say 30. So on 30, we clap.
Okay.
I can sync that in the back.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Creative Sports Podcast. And as you know, we're doing our yearly Black History Month Creatives Spotlight. And today we have a special one, someone who is near and dear to my heart because we go back some ways. And we'll get into that and talk about that. But today we have Serenity Douglas, who's a sports broadcaster and media influencer. So, Serenity, welcome to the Creative Sports Podcast.
Hey, Darius. Super excited to be here. We go way back. So it's kind of funny how we get to talk about things in our career, because you've known me since college.
Yeah. Which isn't that long ago, but it is a long time ago.
It was like a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, since you were, what year did you go to Texas?
2016 to 2021.
Okay, so I came in January of 17. So yeah, I've known you since your sophomore year.
Yeah.
Or no, your freshman year, because that was, your freshman year, because that was the spring. So
yeah.
So with that being said, let's talk about your career journey to being a sports broadcaster / all the things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about your journey to becoming a sports broadcaster and creative.
Well, the journey, funny enough, I just posted a TikTok about the journey. It's been an uphill battle, but it's been all good. I started at Longhorn Network 2018. Is when I started there. I got an internship, and that was great because I got to see the workings of sports media. But in actuality, I was really just like a glorified coffee getter, and that's okay because I was just happy to be there. I was happy to be in the room. And then spring of 2019, I wasn't necessarily allowed to go back. Just conflict of interest. You know, I'm heavy in season at that point, so it would have just been too difficult. And after graduation in 2021, actually during COVID really is when I started to do a lot of the interviews. I started doing some interviews for companies like FlowTrack and my own platforms. Started my podcast, Let's Talk About It, that's now been revamped to Say It to Serenity. And just creating a space for athletes to just yap and talk about all the things that they have been wanting to get off their chest. And that was also helping me just build reps and confidence, getting the reps in for how to interview athletes and how to talk to different types, you know, because not everybody is a talker necessarily. And then after that, it just kind of propelled me to going to a TV station right when I graduated. It was an NBC affiliate all the way in northern Wisconsin. and that was really difficult. So I made the change to come down to Texas and so on and so forth. But it really just all started at Texas. I just knew that there were so many stories that needed to be told. Like, I'm around the Olympians. Well, they weren't Olympians yet, but I was around Olympians, and people don't know these things about them, you know, that I see on a day-to-day basis. And I felt like the public needed to know. And instead of getting mad that the public didn't know, I could just be that change.
Right. So going back to Longhorn Network, right? Because that was the year that we kind of crossed paths as, you know, creatives, because I was working at the time with LHN for their football show that they were revamping, and you were there clipping off stuff for shows. So kind of talk about some of those ins and outs that you talked about. You were a glorified coffee getter, but you were absolutely more than that, because you gradually got to being able to work on, you know, some of the pieces that were, you know, was hitting the airways, not just regionally, but nationally as well.
Yeah, for sure. It was one of those things where I didn't realize how good I had it until I was gone, or I didn't even really get to realize the type of work I was doing until I got in a station myself. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I was a production assistant. That's what I was doing. Me, I just felt like, you know, like I said, a glorified coffee getter. Like, I just felt like an intern. This was before AI was a thing as well. So I was just transcribing a whole lot of interviews from the football players and realized that, goodness gracious, they say a lot. They say like a lot. So I was just typing out those interviews. Yeah, I was typing out those interviews because they had nothing to put it in, a system to put it in to get scripts, doing things like getting the talent that was on set, whatever they needed, going out and shooting like pictures, football games and basketball games. And that was courtside. So that was a whole different experience as well. But mainly what it taught me is that it's a grind constantly. There are so many different jobs in this sport. And there's so many different things than just being the on-air talent. And just to have the pleasure of realizing what everybody does. Being an intern, you really get to learn what everybody does. And I really appreciated that. Getting to see what the cameramen do, what the production assistant does, how it is in the booth, how it is in the truck for a soccer game, and all the different control rooms, how everybody is really important. So the last chain of command is the talent. But there was so much that goes into it. So that helped me learn about TV. So there was so many things outside of just being the face and being on air that I feel a lot of people should know. It's something that I teach a lot of the mentees that I have. You need to know about everything, because if you're on air and, you know, something happens and they tell you to keep going for 30 seconds and you're like, why would I have to keep going for 30 seconds? Well, you know that, you know, you're going to have a rollout in the next 30. You know that there's a commercial break that you need to fill. You know that there's this, you know, there's that. And being in a newsroom like that before I knew anything, you know, just being a junior in college, that's when I really learned so much.
So many good points. Because a lot of times we can get so caught up in, oh, well, I'm only being able to do this and I'm only being able to do that. But being around professionals who have won Emmys, people who have traveled the world with not just Longhorn Network, but ESPN, people that you could learn from, like Andy and Becca and Jordan and Nick, just people that at the time, like a lot of times when you're in a building, especially if it's unfamiliar territory, you can sometimes like not know like where you are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
But then afterwards, you kind of learn like, oh, wow, I actually was in this place with the same people who have done all these amazing things. So let's pivot backwards a little bit, because we always like to, you know, we know where you got your kind of like jump in the industry, but let's take it all the way back. Like, how long have you known that you wanted to either be on camera, a creative, that this field is something that you were interested in? Like, at what point of your life was that like a thing for you?
I think it's actually funny because if you had asked me this a couple months ago, I probably would have said college. You know, because I remember distinctively a conversation that I had with my academic advisor and trying to figure out what direction I wanted to go in. Because, you know, freshman year, you take pretty much all the same classes. And then eventually it's like, let's start getting into more focus for your career. Mm-hmm. And Lindsay, her name is Lindsay. She asked me, what do you like to do? I said, I like to talk. She said, okay, well, what else? I said, I like to do sports. So, you know, we kind of put it together and it was like a sports reporter. And I remember that conversation. I was never lost for what I wanted to do, though. So take it back, though. I used to do pageants in high school. And I rewatched me winning. And what they said was, I forgot that I put this. I completely forgot. And it was in high school. So they said, Serenity Douglas, you know, she's signed to the University of Texas. You know, when they're reading pretty much your whole resume. And she said, she wants to be an ESPN sports anchor. And I said, okay. So I did know what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't just think of this one day, you know?
Right.
But I think it just molded more when I got into college, especially when I got those real life experiences and seeing the athletes I was around and how I looked at them. Like, they were just not being served as well as they could. I literally had the inside. You could look at it like I had the inside scoop. You know, I'm around Sam Ehlinger. You know, I'm around Mo Bamba. We're eating together, you know? Nobody knows that he likes to get two waffles while he's leaving dining hall every day. And, like, that's his thing, you know? Because there are things that the public doesn't see. And... Mm-hmm. I would say I've always been a pretty practical person where instead of getting angry at stations or media outlets or even the coverage from the school, not knowing those things, I could be that. I knew how to be that. And you establish relationships with athletes where they would give you an inside scoop or they would give you an interview that they really wouldn't give to anybody else. And I kind of became obsessed with that. I do wish that I used it even more, but it really wasn't the era yet. You know, social media content creation, it didn't spark up so much. This is not new. I want to preface that by saying, like, you know, content creation is not new. However, now people are making six figures doing it. So that's new. People are making careers doing it. That's new. But I say that to say it wasn't a thing back then to take that and show it in the way that it's being shown now. So I just didn't know what I had at the moment. I would say I knew towards the end of my time there, but just, not yet. But I think that's a good way to sum up how eventually I knew what I wanted to do for sure. It started to materialize more and more, though, as time went on.
Yeah. And you came at an interesting time and finished at an interesting time because, like, right after or like right at the tail end, we start this so-called NIL.
Right.
You weren't able, like, that was the year after you.
Right before. Right. Like, man, right, like, before. Come on.
But it hadn't materialized into what it is now. Right. Mm-hmm. Thinking about how big NIL has gotten in such a short amount of time, like, thinking back to your career, if you had this on day one versus the last day, how different would you think your trajectory would be? And how much do you think that you would have tapped into like that earlier?
Oh, that's a great question. A question I've definitely asked myself. I would have been tapped in. You hear me? Like, I would have been tapped in. I know that for sure because I was already doing it to an extent. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have the resources. I don't even want to say the resources because Texas gave me everything I needed. I didn't have the knowledge to think that far ahead. but yeah. It was there. And I recall it being there. And I know that for sure, because when it did come around, 2020, COVID, mm-hmm. when it did come around, I specifically recall when TikTok came around. Well, I will say, okay, let me preface that as well. I don't know exactly when TikTok was created, but yes, it blew up in 2020. I have not been really around for a start of an app before. Twitter was already around. Instagram was already around. So this was such a sweet spot. And yeah. I remember my teammates. I mean, I was at Indoor Nationals. They told us to go home. We couldn't believe it. And I wasn't really on social media because I try not to be too much on social media around competition time. But they literally told us to go home. I'm like, let me download Twitter and find out what the heck is going on. And my teammate, Micaiah, was like, yeah, I've been making these things called TikToks. We're like, what are you talking about? He said, yeah, it got 300 views. All you got to do is hashtag for your page. And we were making TikToks. We didn't know what else to do. We were like, okay, our season just got canceled. And we're waiting for them to, you know, load up the jet so we can get out of New Mexico. And in that, I think about if I had known what I know now back mm-hmm. then, how to really capitalize, because back then we were just making silly dancing videos. But absolutely. right after they canceled our season, maybe like a month or two, I started to make these TikToks. And reflecting on that, like I said, I just made a TikTok about this. So I was really reflecting on it as of late. And I did like an anchor style TikTok where I was talking about all of the Texas athletes who got their season canceled, like just giving credit to all the seniors. And I completely forgot about that TikTok. And I just think about if I started to make it was a package. Like I can stop calling it a TikTok. It was a package. I just didn't know what a package was yet. And, you know, I didn't know what a VOSAT was yet, or, yeah. you know, I didn't know what a whip was. If I had known that back when I still had the resources of Longhorn Network, I had a studio at my fingertips. I had cameras absolutely. At my fingertips. And I just didn't capitalize because I just really didn't know until literally 2 years later. And then even more so when I graduated 2021, I could tell that there was just a shift. And I was hopping on the wave. I was able to hop on the wave very quickly. Yes. Because like I said, I started my own podcast. It was just on Instagram Live, you know, nothing fancy like this. Mm-hmm. And just having those important conversations. So I do believe that if NIL were to come along before I graduated, I do believe that I would have possibly been further along. I do believe that I would have been able to capitalize a lot. But ultimately, I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at where I am, and I'm not mad at, you know, what I didn't know.
Yeah. And it was a lot of unknown back then. Right. I remember having a conversation with an athlete at Texas the year prior to NIL when I still worked at Texas. And it was a basketball player, and I was like, hey, if you want, because at the time we had three players who were interested in media, right? And I told her, I was like, hey, this thing is coming soon. It's coming very, very soon. If you start a podcast now, you have all these connections with different athletes across the country. You transferred here, you went to another school, you know people who are in right. NFL, start there. If you right. start now, you'll get a head start on what's to come. And she started and then ended up pivoting out of it, and it didn't. But just thinking about how not only just that one athlete, but all of you, the rules were so different then. Because you talk about when, because I remember when you started with Longhorn Network, and then it was almost like hey, this is a conflict of interest, because it's like, oh, student athletes can't, you know, they can't have internships. Yeah. Air quotes, right.
I got an email from compliance.
Right.
They said, shut it down.
I remember that. You could go and do some volunteer hours. Cause I remember a swimmer, there was, And it was like, well, this person is doing this. Why can't this person do it? And it was like loosely based on language. So like if you were, you know, if you were doing this one thing, then it's okay. But if you're doing this thing, then it's like, oh, this sucks. Right. But just now, if you think back to if you had the opportunity of what the kids now have, well, we call them kids, like you were just one of them a few years ago.
They are kids. They are kids.
They're babies compared to me. Man, like, and it's still a lot that they probably don't even know because, and I'm not just saying, I'm not tooting my own horn like, oh, I have all the information. I can just give it to them. No, it's literally for having been around this stuff for a very long time. Like, they may know 1,000 times more about TikTok than I do, but you made the joke to say, I've never been around for the start of an app before. And I can literally say that I've been around for every single app from Black Planet to Facebook to Twitter to Instagram, Spill, TikTok, all of them. Like, it's so many. Blue Sky now, Threads, everything. That may show age, but it's a beautiful thing when you can learn it from the ground up. It's also a beautiful thing when you get on later when once it's established, but just they have so much at their fingertips now. So I'm going to ask one more NIL question because this is, I have a take on this, but I would really love from a creator's perspective who is, we're naming it and claiming it, a future multi-million dollar influencer we're talking to on the front end. Who do you think NIL, like when you think of true NIL, name, image, likeness, branding, who do you think benefits, is set up to benefit more? Men or women? And while you think about that, I have a theory because I understand how much, like when you think about the NFL, right? Not every single player is on the Campbell Soup commercial or the Nike commercial or Under Armour or Gatorade, right? It's only a handful. But when it comes to other sports, like you look at what it's not a WNBA sanctioned thing, but you look at Unrivaled.
Right.
All of the brand opportunity that they've put in front of the players, just how different they are. So who do you, like, if you're a college student or if you are a parent of a college student right now, who do you think would be set up best for NIL opportunity?
Well, for starters, I want to go back a little and claim what you said. Yes, future multi-million dollar. Gotta claim it. I gotta claim that. I believe that it is set up to benefit men a lot more. I also just want to say that NIL has become something that we would have never imagined. And it's, I don't want this to sound bitter, but I do think it'll be short-lived. Regulations are going to come very soon because right now it's how real can I be up here, Darius?
if it goes too far, I can edit, you know.
Okay. I'm
still an editor.
The point I'm trying to make is like, NIL has hit college like crack in the 80s. You know, it's like one of those things where it has just. Okay, let me use it as an example. My first job outside of college was with Orange Bloods. Orange Bloods is under Rivals. It's basically just a sports media outlet where it's really blog based, if we're being honest. A lot of boards, kind of like a Reddit, but for Texas. Yep. Very heavy on Texas football, and they hired me year after I got out. Well, not a year after, a couple months after I got out, and they sign NIL athletes to do a podcast with me every week. So we had Xavier Worthy, we had Jordan Winnington, we had, you know, Jake Majors, we had some great athletes, DeMarvion Overshown, and all they had to do was sit here like we're doing right now and talk. And they got paid by our company to do that. Mm-hmm. And then it lasted for a year, but it was a lot of restrictions. So I wasn't allowed to go to campus to do in-person things really with them. It had to be nothing Texas related. That's how NIL started, where it was like, you cannot.
It was supposed to be that way. Yep.
Yeah. It has to be your own name, image, and likeness. So when they got on that podcast, they couldn't wear anything Texas. They couldn't have anything Texas in the back. They were like, that has to only be you. Okay. Valid. Now, I remember like months in, this donor gave to Texas because they were doing bad. I mean, what's new? They were doing bad around those years where they were not getting enough O-linemen. So we had an O-lineman on our pod, like, and signed to us. And they pretty much gave $50,000 to like every O-lineman that Texas ends up signing or something like that. It was like the O-line program. I remember
that being a thing.
Yeah, it was like some type of O-line program. And I was like, is that NIL? Like, what? It's like just you're just giving it to them? What do you mean? I mean, I love that the athletes are getting paid, but I looked at name, image, and likeness like it was like, if you go and buy an Xavier Worthy jersey, he gets 20%. You know, if you go and put him on a billboard, if you want him, his face on Raising Cane's, then he needs to get a percentage of that, right? And then when that shift happened, because it wasn't like that in the beginning, that shift happened, our interviews started to be valued at nothing. Nobody really cared to hear from the athletes anymore. It was not lucrative for our company. The athletes were like, you're paying me $5,000. That's nothing. I'm like, $5,000 to do a Zoom interview with me is what? And that's because they were getting things like a $50,000 just to come to Texas. And I was like, that don't even sound right. And then now, so when you think about it now into what NIL has shifted into, I see Madison Skinner on that hotel commercial. She's wearing a Texas jersey. You know, yeah. I see plenty of people. And that's considered NIL. And that's what's interesting to me. What do you mean you're getting paid $1 million to go in the transfer portal? And that's considered NIL. And that, so yeah. I don't know, like my brain isn't even able to really like fathom that. I know I've kind of like gone off on a tangent for your original question for like, does it benefit women or men? But I say that to say, I think it benefits men a lot more. People want to see football players. They want to see, and that's not a dig. That's not a dig. The women are they're getting to it because now they see what the men are doing. Oh, y'all are getting paid. Look, I know somebody who works in compliance at Texas. They're getting paid to just go do yoga with some donors, and that's considered NIL. And which I'm like, I didn't see a post. I didn't see a post that they had to do. I didn't see that. NIL is being shifted. So now the women are finally getting on the wave because hopefully they're finally getting the resources for that. Now, if you go on LinkedIn, do you know how many NIL management jobs there are? Because they didn't even have people regulating it for the athletes.
Yeah, because they couldn't.
They couldn't. Yeah, they couldn't. But now it's like you need to be able to regulate something or they have to be able to like talk to somebody about it or, you know, like I said, regulate it, like where you have to go and do this commercial for this company. Here's a funnel for it, you know, an athlete funnel. So now the women are getting on the way where, yes, like I said, Madison Skinner on the hotel commercial. You're starting to see the ladies on makeup commercials and makeup brands. Like that's such a no brainer. But the fact that it wasn't a thing, like L'Oreal is not throwing 100K towards every track athlete. You know,
right?
Like football is getting. So it's a little interesting, Darius.
Yeah, and that part we should probably have a whole Maybe we start our own podcast. but that is, so for the benefit of the conversation, we'll probably trim that out and go another direction. But I'm with you 1,000% on that. But I also think that the women, the reason I brought up that question was because I think that financial, when you look at the volume or the number beside it, yes, men probably make way more. Mm-hmm. But for female athletes, there are so many things, like how many men are in skincare commercials or ads, yeah, or yoga, yeah, or like there are so many opportunities that someone like you probably would have tapped into even more because you would have, hey, I'm already doing this. You would have started your podcast, try to say, hey, mm-hmm, I can do this brand deal for, right, like, you know, I can make this post, but hey, I'm also looking for, you know, someone to sponsor my podcast.
Right. But do the women have the resources? I feel like that's really what it's about. I do believe that there are opportunities for both men and women in NIL, heavy, heavy opportunities. I just don't think that the women's has been tapped into as much as the men's.
Well, that's women's sports in general.
In general.
If you look at women's basketball, and we'll stick with women's basketball just because it's one of the most noticeable now.
Right.
But that league started in 1996, 97, right? And look how many years you were at Texas for a number of years. We were intentionally not pouring into these sports. It's like, mm-hmm, like Texas probably had more resources for women than most other schools because they had people like CP who would, you know, stand on the table to get some type of equity influence, mm-hmm, right? But how many people didn't have that? But even at Texas, where it's like, oh yeah, she could do that, but it's still like, oh, well, the women and men play in the same arena. Like that was the
same arena, right?
You know? So, but that's a whole nother conversation for another day. We're going to talk about you, your creativity, and all that. So, next question that I'll ask is, so you go from UT as a student, LHN.
Yeah.
And then you talked about going to work at, so your first job out of college was Orange Bloods.
Yes, it was.
What would you say that you learned and picked up there that has helped prepare you for the rest of your career?
Ooh, what I learned there, numbers matter. How things are able to reflect. I used to think I was doing something by getting 1,000 views on our videos because our videos will all go up on YouTube, and used to wonder why my boss was stressed. Oh, because we need more than 1,000 for it to turn over profit. And that's something that I learned pretty quick. It's called something different in whatever space you're in. Like I go to a TV station, they call it KPIs. You know, like we're
performance indicators,
right? So that was something that I needed to grasp. I'm like, I'm thinking we're doing a great job. Is the Xavier worthy? Like he is the standout freshman, but how is that becoming lucrative for Orange Bloods? And I was just not able to grasp that at the time. So that's something I learned. And then also how to deal with different athletes. We'll stay with Xavier for an example. He was not a talker. On you know, he it just wasn't his thing. Jordan Whittington would love to yap to me. DeMarvion, he loved to they love to talk. And I needed to learn how to guide the conversations. And because it was a weekly thing, it taught me as well. Okay, I need to come to Xavier from a different angle than I would go to DeMarvion and Jordan. I know that Jordan loved talking about, DeMarvion. DeMarvion loved talking about where he was from and country stuff and horses and yada, yada, yada. So I'm like, I'm going to lead with that with him. And Jordan liked to talk about food and Keandre liked to talk about this. So it was the way I had to learn them. And I think that was such a key thing for me. I learn your subject, learn whoever you're interviewing and relate to them in the way that you want. And it took me blocking out. Cause like I said, it was like a kind of like a Reddit board. I really don't have the right word for it, but the fans on there, the Texas fans that were subscribed to Orange Bloods, they were hard on me. You know, they wanted more. They wanted, and they also wanted foolishness. Okay. They wanted me to ask Xavier Worthy why he dropped that pass and to answer for it. That's not how you talk to athletes. And I knew that. They wanted to know why the team was 5-7. What is Sark doing wrong? That's what they wanted to know. And I had to learn how to satisfy them while also not offending the athletes. And I think at the time, it took me having to really expand my journalism skills, to be honest, because you can just ignore what they want. Okay, you ignore what they want, and that video only gets 350 views. You know what I mean? Or you can try to satisfy them while also being respectful and having that integrity, that journalistic integrity with the athlete as well. So instead of asking him why he dropped that pass, you ask Xavier Worthy, what do you think went wrong and what do you want to improve on? And that's what doing those interviews weekly taught me, especially at that stage of my career.
Yeah. That is a great point to make. Is we talked about the shift in a lot of things, but the shift in how journalism has gone from what it used to be to now, because it's almost like non-existent. Because you can get the right answers by asking the right question the right way.
Yeah,
that sounds like a lot of cliche. But it's not.
It's not.
Because a lot of people think that you have to ask the question directly to get the answer that you want.
Exactly.
Because you made a great point, and we're using Xavier, great athlete, who did amazing things at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to talk about a receiver dropping a pass, which I remember... There was another Texas athlete in 2019 when Texas played LSU, dropped a key pass in the LSU game.
Mm-hmm.
Probably could have won that game and would have been the only blemish on LSU's record that year.
Right.
You can ask the way that you ask that question, like, hey, what are the things that you're, if it means, they know that you're asking about a particular thing.
They do.
And if they're comfortable, you've made them comfortable enough to say, hey, that pass that I dropped last week, like that thought has not left my mind since that. Like it's all I can think about. So this week, what I'm working on is X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to acknowledge it. The ones that are, and you're helping them by saying, bro, like, you know, you cost us the game. That's how the fans want you to ask that question.
Right.
But as a person who has some journalistic integrity, which doesn't exist a lot, you have to learn how to ask the right question to get the right answer.
Yeah.
And
it takes practice.
And if they don't want to answer, you can't just say, yeah, but you know what I'm talking. No. It's like, learn how to ask good questions. And if you don't know how, practice.
Right.
Which goes back to you were able to, you know, share lunch with the star quarterback and the star basketball first round draft picks and all of that. You can practice. If you're a college student, and I know we're going to get to advice, but I'm going to give a piece of advice right now for any college age student who's a student athlete. If you're on campus, you have practice, people to practice with right in front of you.
You do.
Your teammates, if you're on a team, all of you are on a team. There's no individual thing in college. Even if you're on golf team, you still got golf teammates. Tennis teammates, basketball teammates, football teammates. Use them to practice. Get the reps. Reps, 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 reps. Get them.
Yeah.
Like you'll never have access to as many people to practice with as you do on a college campus.
Literally. Couldn't have said it better.
Right. So learn how to ask good questions. So you go from Orange Bloods to Is that when you made the pivot to television?
That's when I made the pivot to television. Yeah, news stations. Yeah, yeah. So, well, during the time of working at Orange Buzz, I was getting some track gigs. And yeah, it was literally like that summer. I was able to get some track gigs because I ran track. And I met this company called American Track League. He was like, yeah, you know, I do have this meet that you could do. First assignment, talk to Alice and Felix. What do you mean, talk to Alice and Felix?
Yeah.
This is my first, what? You know, I was shaking. So yeah, all while doing those interviews as well, my track reporting career started to take off. Or I guess you could, yeah, in layman's terms, yeah, take off. Started to get a lot more opportunities where I was on ESPN for one of the track meets, or some of the track meets were broadcast on Peacock maybe. And that was a big deal for me and tapping into that. And I learned now that I was really just getting not the scraps, because I was very excited for every opportunity I got, but my mentors that I was speaking with at the time, like if they couldn't go and do a meet, then I would go and do it. Nothing was too small for me. No task was too small for me. I'm just starting out and I need, like you were saying, like reps. So I really needed those reps, and that's what I was going to do. Yeah. So just to come to find out, it's like, oh, it's because this reporter couldn't do it. That's why they gave it to you. It doesn't matter. So right. I made such a big impact that I did end up becoming their primary reporter. And now we have that relationship. It's been 3 years. So yeah, like you were saying, reps really matters. But yeah, I did eventually make that transition onto TV. After that, Rhinelander, Wisconsin. That's where I moved to.
Rhinelander, Wisconsin.
God.
That sounds painful.
It was.
Sorry to the people in Wisconsin. what?
Now they know. They know how it is.
So this is a two-part. Like, so mm-hmm. I always like to, every place that you go, you can learn something
Absolutely.
From, right? Good, bad, or indifferent. It helps prepare you for what's to come. What do you think was your, were the biggest things that you learned at that news station?
Ooh, I learned everything. Everything that I wish I was doing in college so that I could be a little bit further along. And I say that because the people I was working with, they learned in college. So maybe I should have tailored a lot more of my classes to be hardcore, like broadcasting classes. I was mainly on like the communication journalism aspect for my, and sports media business. So that's something that, like, that's a piece of advice I give to my mentees as well. Know those things before you get to the station, because learning them at the station, first of all, you're trying to get used to the hours. You're trying to get used to having a real job. You have other things to worry about on top of learning. But I learned resilience in the workplace. I had resilience because I ran track. But getting it in this way was completely different. They say your hours are from 2 to 11 p.m. I would come in at like 1:50. And mm-hmm. I quickly learned that that is just not the case. A lot of my stories were at 12. Some of my stories were at 9 a.m. And you still had to stay until 11 p.m. And no, there was no clocking out. For sports reporters, at least, there was no clocking out. And they knew that. They did it on purpose. Because our hours are crazy. And I was leaving. So I was working from like 12 to 12, noon to 12 a.m. a lot of the times, because after we got off air at 11, you have articles to finish. You have to set up your story for the next day. You have to make sure everything is good for the rest of the week, to be honest. So I learned resilience, so much resilience, not only for just getting used to a new schedule and getting used to being on air every day, but I also learned that it's just tough all around. I definitely wish I didn't pick Rhinelander, Wisconsin. I had no family anywhere near me. The only black girl in the town. It was tough. So much snow. But I learned so much. I learned so, so much. And I also learned about accuracy. Goodness gracious. I could not pronounce the Green Bay Packers general manager's name, Brian Gutekunst, to save my life. And I was like, why is this a big deal? Well, maybe it's because it's the GM of the Packers. And if you're in a situation to say Brian Gutekunst, you need to learn how to say that man's name. And I just remember I messed it up 3 different times on air. And goodness, it was just not happening. So accuracy, you need to learn how to be efficient. So deadlines matters. So it's like a balancing act of having to be accurate, but having to be quick and having to know how to make your deadlines. Well, everybody knows when you rush, you make mistakes. But, you know, if anybody hears that, they're like, oh, so don't rush. You have to rush. It needs to make it on air. You just need to make sure you're dang near perfect. And that was such a difficult, difficult thing for me to grasp at the time. Also, I learned that I'm an essential worker. What do you mean? I'm just a sports lady. No, when we have crazy weather coming, that means all hands on deck. That means you're sleeping at the station. I could not grasp being an essential worker as a reporter. And then I realized, who in the world is supposed to tell them what road not to take when there's inclement weather coming?
Yep.
You do. Who is telling them about school closures and these things, like these things that you would think that you would get a day off for? No. Who's telling them that? You are. On these holidays, who's telling them Merry Christmas? You are. And I didn't realize that. I thought that they had normal off days and normal, like normalcy. Being a reporter, there is no normalcy. You are as essential worker as a nurse. And that blew my mind, because I didn't look at it like we were doing important work like a nurse. So that was all just really, really difficult for me to grasp. When I first got to that first market. But like I said, oh my God, I learned so, so much. So I appreciate it in the long run.
That's awesome. And sometimes you got to do what you don't want to do to get to where you're trying to go.
Hello? I say that all the time.
You've been able to do that. And so we'll get into some of the fun stuff. You briefly talked about how you were working at a station, but mm-hmm. also getting to do some stuff as a, you know, track kind of field reporter.
Yeah.
How were you using all of these opportunities? I mean, you're still very young in your career, mm-hmm. But you've been able to do a lot in this short amount of time, right? Mm-hmm. How are you using things from each of those opportunities that you were doing kind of adjacent to prepare you for being as comfortable and as solid as you are on camera now?
Yeah, like, I think it helped my sideline reporting. It helped me anchoring. My anchoring helped me be a sideline reporter. Those live shots out there in the field that I would do at the TV station really helped me in sideline reporting. And that's how I had to think about it. Like, no, it's not the exact same, you know, they're not having a race and then coming over and talking to you. And that's just, you know, that's sideline reporting was so, the concept of it is simple. You know, you just talk about what they just did. Simple. You move on. As opposed to a live shot, you have to tell a story out there in the field. But I think both related to the other. You just had to take what you can take out of it and try to use it as more experience. It's honestly, it was just giving me more reps. But it was difficult. It was really difficult to balance it. Even as I went to my next station in Texas after that, it was always really difficult to balance it because I was going and working track meets, especially in the spring, going to go work a track meet. And then I would have them fly me back in on Sunday so I can go and anchor that night for my TV station. And either job didn't care about the other. You're there to do the job that you were paid to do. Me being on air and anchoring that Sunday night show, they don't know that I was just in Boston earlier that morning. They don't care. They don't care about that. They want to know what's going on. They want to know what's going on with their Packers, or they want to know what's going on with the Dallas Mavericks. Cause I eventually started to work in Texas. So I think that just helped me to be resilient and to realize that there are different fields. I never wanted to be pigeonholed in one specific sport. I never wanted to be pigeonholed in one specific career as well, especially in these early stages, which is why I never let it go. I make good money in sideline reporting for track. It's great. I love it. But I knew that there was value in the fact that during the week, I am talking about the Dallas Cowboys and I'm turning those packages and I'm doing those live shots and I'm anchoring and I'm in the studio. And I'm on those shoots, that makes me valuable at the fact that I have all of that experience covering all of those sports. And then I turn around and I talk about track as well. Nobody else is doing that. And that gave me the confidence to keep going, even though it's very hard to balance both. And you find your footing. You definitely do. Talking to just high profile athletes in either space. I was doing it in both spaces. It just teaches you how to shift things a little bit. And then even honestly going to sideline reporting and talking to production, having that experience of being at a TV station, it helped me as well. I was like, you know what? Can my live shot be 45? And maybe we do like a wide shot of the field, or maybe we throw up a graphic about this. This is how many times, I don't know, Sydney McLaughlin won this meet, you know? And they're like, wow, I didn't even think about that. How did you think about that as an on-air talent? Oh, because I've made graphics at the TV station. Yeah. I know what a lower is. I know not to, I mean, sometimes I know not to wear white on air sometimes, you know, because it doesn't do as well on air like we think. So I know those things because of the experiences of each job I would do. So I would say like that's kind of how I used one to help the other, is constantly an uphill battle. Yeah, but I definitely appreciated doing both for sure.
Awesome. So let's talk about some of the highlights and lowlights together.
So
we all see the finished product, right?
Yes.
But, and you kind of alluded to this, you're doing two things at one time. You're having to fly from this place to that, to that. And it works out for you.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about some of the things that go on that, you know, there are a lot of aspiring reporters and creators and all that. Talk about some of the moments that the people don't see.
Oh, wow.
When it comes to covering and creating in a sports world.
Yeah. I think what people don't realize is you're only as good as your last story. And that was something that was also really difficult for me to grasp. I'm like, I just got the DeMarvion Overshown for the Dallas Cowboys to speak to me. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, that was Tuesday and today's Wednesday. What's new? You know, and I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize. It's constantly what's new. People go to work and they work on projects for days. And that's just not a thing for TV. It's constantly evolving. It's constantly about what is next. And then, like I said, what people a lot of people don't realize is you love clicking on who was it this year? You love clicking on the TV and seeing the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington Commanders on that Thanksgiving Turkey Day game. But you don't realize that all those reporters are not with their family on that game. You know, yes, we think about it as the athletes, but you know, you don't feel as bad for the athletes because they make millions of dollars. But those reporters are there as well. So that's something that a lot of people don't realize, that's not as glamorous. You are working those holidays. And you think that just because you're working those holidays, you get a free pass, you know, bring the whole family with you? No, ma'am. If those athletes can't bring the whole family, the reporter for sure cannot bring the whole family. So it's really just you and having to split up those days. To think that your biggest highlight in your career could be working the Christmas game every year. And that is one of the highlights. That is like, that's how you know that you've reached it. You're working those holidays, but you're working those holidays. And then I would say something else. Not everybody's going to like your style. It is what it is. However, if you make sure that you have that accuracy, if you make sure that you have that journalistic integrity, you're not intentionally going out there to make people angry. You know what I mean? Then that's all you can do. But you might just not be some people's styles. You would be so surprised at what that blog would say to me, what those comments would say about me. They would think I wouldn't know anything about football or anything about basketball, especially just being a black woman in this. You're constantly being tried. I'm a sports reporter. You're in a room full of men who are invalidating you, which is insane because we're in the same exact room. We're in the same room. And they automatically think that they need to take lead, even though you have been at the company longer, you know? So you go through that as well. Also, and I would say that this is probably like my final one. Athletes don't like the media. It doesn't matter if they would get fined. They don't like you. And just trying to go in with putting your best foot forward and trying to establish that relationship beforehand, if you can, it's not always, you know, easy to. But learning their style, learning what to ask and what not to ask, but by getting the same point across, you still have a job to do. And I wanted to say this when we were talking about it kind of before, when we were talking about, you know, what to ask and what not to ask, how the fans would say it and how, as opposed to how you're going to say it. That was one of my biggest lessons when I first started. I wanted to, if we can remember, I think it was around 2022 when Sha'Carri Richardson could not go to, was it Olympics? It
might have been
Olympics. Yeah. 2021, actually, yeah.
The Olympics.
Yep. It was Olympics. She couldn't go to the Olympics because of her ban with an illegal substance, and who ended up getting moved up to her place to go to represent Team USA because they only take three in the 100. So they moved up the fourth place finisher. That fourth place finisher was Jenna Prandini. I'm very good friends with Jenna Prandini. Mm-hmm. However, this is a very sensitive time. It's a very sensitive time all around for just black people. I want to say the George Floyd things were happening, that we were about a year out from that because that happened during COVID. So tensions were high. And Sha'Carri got really, really popular from that suspension. So Jenna was getting a lot of hate. Bad. You know, just, I mean, she's a white woman. So that's one. And just getting moved up to take her place. And then you had people who don't even understand track. They right, think right. that Jenna took her place. Jenna did not take anything. Jenna finished fourth, you know? And then they're sending Jenna hate mail. And they're in her comments saying that she's a horrible person. And so, you know, just a lot of people don't realize tensions are high. I was able to get an exclusive interview with Jenna. I am friends with her. She didn't talk to anybody else. And I would say I ended up fumbling that interview. I did great at getting her to talk about her feelings, about making the team. Only positive thing, she told me, I'm not talking about that. That's what she said. That's the only way I'll do the interview with you. I said, oh, that is completely fine. So we talked about everything else. We talked about what she likes to eat. We talked about her favorite color. We talked about everything else. So it was 20 minutes of nothingness. And for me to learn later on by my mentor that there are different ways of getting the answers that you want. And I was like, well, she said she didn't want to talk about that. There's different ways of getting the answers that you want. You don't ask her head on, well, how do you feel about making the team over Sha'Carri? What do you think about Sha'Carri smoking? You know, and like, you know, you're not asking her that. Jenna, tensions are high right now with you making that Olympic team, but how are you trying to refocus your attention? That's how you ask. And, you know, so, and that was difficult for me because I wanted to respect my friends because, yes, having that relationship is fun and it's good. You'll get the exclusive, but then you still have to do your job. So that's something that is like kind of not as glamorous for a lot of people. They think that you don't have a job to do at the end of the day, or, you know, this is how I pay my bills. The athletes, that's how they pay their bills. And sometimes having that conversation as frank as that before you guys go out there is important. Hey, I need to ask you this. How would you like me to frame it? But I have to ask. And that's something that I was not comfortable doing at first. Because I was just so scared. I'm like, I got the exclusive, child. You know, I'm not going to ruffle any feathers. So I would say those are some of the things that are not as glamorous that a lot of people don't realize.
We've talked about the glamorous life of being a creative and broadcaster, reporter, all those things, right? Talk about what you do like as a hobby, because all of the travel, all of the going from this city to that city to this, like, what do you do to kind of level set away from all of this.
Yeah. I always say, from the hustle and bustle of it all, I like to relax. I'm actually a very relaxing, not in the media type of person. So after my meets, or after whatever game I've worked, I don't even like to go on social media. I love to read. I have a ton of books, or I listen to audiobooks. I paint, I work out. Those are the things. So all very low vibrational things, just because you would think that because I'm a media person, I like the media, I like the attention. It gives me anxiety. I like to go out there and do my job and go home. I just like to stay out of the mix. So I try to do things on my off time that keeps my nerves pretty low. Yeah, so I love to read, love to paint, love to work out. I do love to travel, but sometimes I just like to sit still because my job has me going everywhere. But what I have started to do, especially now that I have the freedom now, since I do this freelance full time, I like to add on an extra day onto whatever gig I'm working in whatever city.
Yep.
Either on the front end, but probably on the back end, because I don't like to do anything before I work. But on the back end, just to explore that city and actually see something other than the field, the court, or the track. And that has made it worthwhile. It's really done a difference for me. I would fly in and for a day and only see the track and leave. Now I'm like, okay, you know what? Let me have the company fly me out a day later. And maybe I'll go to a museum or see something that that city is known for. That's something else I also try to do. Whatever city I'm visiting for that game or track meet, I like to try whatever food that they're known for. So when I was in Boston, I tried I Googled it. They're known for their lobster rolls. So I tried their lobster roll. I go to Memphis, they're known for their barbecue. So that's something else I try to just throw on there too. So it doesn't always just feel like work.
Yeah. So we're going to break this up a little bit and have a little fun. Play a little game. We give you 30 seconds to list some things. So you've been around a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had a lot of roles, right? So we're going to pick one of the two, and I'll say in your creative, in your freelance creative in doing this.
Okay.
You get 30 seconds to list as many tools as you can of things that you must have to like crush an interview or an assignment.
Oh.
We'll say assignment because interview, you don't need much to do that. But you get 30 seconds.
Just like resources or okay.
It can be a mic. It can be.
Oh, okay. I got you.
What are must haves for you to get the job done? In 3, 2, 1.
I need my lip gloss. I need my mic. I need my camera. My phone. I need this blotching thing that I use so I don't look so oily all the time.
Okay.
I need water really bad. I always keep edge control with me as well. I would say a notepad with like some notes that I jot down. Oh, what else?
Making good. One more time.
Dang, I feel
like that's a good list.
I feel like that's it.
Especially the water. Like, oh my water God, is so underrated.
I'm so thirsty.
yeah, it's one of those things. Almost done here.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned, so this is kind of a two-part thing, because one part of this is really funny. I saw a post from you a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked about how you beat a particular person in a 200 in a race. Uh-huh. And that was the last time that you ever beat this person. This person happens to be a mutual acquaintance. Your former teammate,
mm-hmm.
Amazing person, Tiana Daniels,
mm-hmm.
Who went on to become a silver medalist in that 2021 Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about how life, you know, you, I always tell young people, the people mm-hmm. that you are in class with on these college campuses, you, or that you're practicing with if you're a student athlete, like the college is more than just getting just a degree, right?
Oh, it absolutely is.
Lifelong friends, organizations that you start together, this person may hire you or their parents or their mm-hmm. uncle or vice versa. You may hire them. Talk about the, you mentioned Sydney McLaughlin. You mm-hmm. mentioned Allyson Felix being one of the first people that you interviewed. You probably rubbed shoulders with Sonya Richards Ross a time or two because she was always around. You've been impacted and surrounded by a lot of successful women and other athletes, but just talk about the impact all of these Black female athletes have had on your life and how you, do you look at the successes of the people around you and use that as fuel, or do you measure that? Because sometimes we can fall in the trap of like, oh, Tiana went to the Olympics. Mm-hmm. I didn't. Like, or are you inspired? It's like, that's my girl. Like, I love to hype. Like, are you using that as fuel or are you using that as a crutch?
Always inspiration. And I really want to touch on what you said about, especially speaking to the student athletes in college. And this is what I tell them as well. Whoever asks me for advice, you have to know what's at your fingertips when you have it. And I started to realize it around my junior and senior year, which is why I started joining clubs, which is why I was like, I don't want to just leave here. Like, I got my degree. You know, I got a couple trophies. Life is good, you know, and just be done. Mm-hmm. There's so much more to get out of it. I remember specifically saying, I want Texas to be talking about me long after I graduate. And I, that really only happens when you have an impact in one way or another. So track was cool. Track was going good. But I'm like, I want to join some. Well, one, I want to help. And I want to go and volunteer. I want to help the student athletes. So I was in SAC. I was in the NAACP. And I was pretty much the advocate for Texas track as well. Whenever we needed anything from CDC or from CP. And you really just need to know what you have when you have it. There's no other time in your life where you're going to have everything at your fingertips. And when I tell you every single thing we needed, I didn't have to lift a finger. Why are we flying private to track meets? You know what I mean? Like, that's insane. Yeah. And I was, we were doing like all the food paid for. Our apartments were paid for. We had clothes on our back. So just really don't take that for granted. That's what I can say. And then the people you come in contact with, where they go, make those connections now. And I know it's really hard because, you know, you're like, look, I am tired. Coach just beat me down. I don't feel like talking to anybody in dining hall. But then you wouldn't be able to call on those people later on. DeMarvion, being able to call on him later on when he hurt himself again. And I got the exclusive interview with his mom to talk to his mom. She said, I've been seeing your interview since Orange Bloods. You always cared about him a lot, you know? So that only happened because I didn't treat him like he was just another assignment. And that's what's important about it. You never know who you're going to call on. And you spoke about Tiana. Yes, Tiana is my long time
shout
sister.
Shout out to T.
Yeah. she's my long time sister. So yeah, to see how well she has done, I am only inspired about it. And she constantly says the same thing to me because we're in the same spaces, but we're doing two completely different things. And even outside of T, I was actually called Tara Davis Woodhall, just called me. She's an Olympic champion, world champion.
Amazing athlete.
She's amazing. Her and Hunter are great together. Even ended up becoming a power couple. Great. That's my really good friend. She has a track meet at the end of this month. She called me to do it. And so everything's paid for, everything's cool. And now I'm going to fly out to LA and like, I'm able to FaceTime her and be like, Tara, you thought of me, you know,
right.
she could have called NBC if she wanted to call NBC, you know what I mean? Cause she has that power to, and that's very well in her right to, but she decided to call me for this because she respects what I do and my craft. And I have never, you know, gone to her and just one, been disrespectful, or I've never not looked at her like she's the great athlete that she is, and also as a friend, you know. So I've built that connection, and she has built that connection with me as well. There have been times where she hasn't liked some of the questions I've asked, and then we've laughed about it later. And I think that that has also built that mutual respect, that she knows that when I come in there, I'm not just going to be willy nilly. Oh, well, Tara got me this gig, you know, everything's cool. This is work for me, and she knows I take it serious. So that only happens when you set those things up early on. So just think, I would say, just like think about those things. Yes, I can call on the Tiana, you know, I can call on the Tara Davis, I can call on these Olympic champions whenever I need to, whenever I want to, because we always had that relationship. I mean, crazy enough, I just saw a picture of me and Noah Lyles on our visit together to Florida. Did I know that he was going to end up becoming an Olympic champion? Not necessarily. I didn't even know who he was back then. Yeah. But in 2015, but now, you know, I might go to his wedding in April, you know? So you just never really know who you are going to cross paths with, and who you will need to call on when the time comes. So I find that really, really important. And vice versa, like while they have done a lot for me, they've given me the exclusive whenever I need it, you know? There's been a lot of times in the mix zone, it's called the mix zone at track meets, where we just, you know, it's basically like a big old scrum. Football has it as well too, where it's just a whole bunch of reporters yelling at the athletes, like, you know, trying to ask them questions. I've literally had athletes point me out and say, I'm only going to answer questions from Serenity. That doesn't happen overnight, you know? So that happens just when you build those relationships, for sure. And yeah, it is just kind of funny. I don't know. I have another one to post of me and Tiana. The one time I beat Tiana in a 200, and then she went on to become an Olympic champion, Olympic silver medalist, an Olympic silver medalist. And yeah, I never beat her again.
Hey, sometimes it happens that way.
Yeah, sometimes it happens that way, and that's okay. I mean, I'm a pro in my own respective thing, and that's reporting. That's what I'm good at.
Absolutely. And you're building your own, like, path. You're,
for sure,
you know, it's cliche to say, and this will probably be the title of this episode, is, you know, owning your own lane. You've created this lane for yourself. Like, you've done the things that you needed to do to get the reps with news stations, get the reps with LHN, ESPN. Like, you've done the things that will help propel you. Like, it, you know, one of the greatest things that I hear people say, and it's mostly in like the music world, right? And how it takes 10 years to become an overnight success.
Yeah.
Now, social media has sped those things up for a lot of people, because you can be social media famous, but it doesn't necessarily always translate to success in dollars and all that kind of stuff. So,
right.
You're charting your own path and doing very well. And you've already garnered the respect of your peers, because some of these people are still your peers. Like, you were a track athlete, so you ran against some of these athletes. You were, you know, fans of some of these athletes. Some of them may have watched you coming up competing. Because you do, as you mentioned, so subtly, like, I do have some trophies. I do have some awards. Yeah, you can't just slide by that.
No.
You
know,
like, you have some work to show for. You weren't just on the track team. You were, if I remember correctly, you guys won multiple Big 12 championships while you were at Texas. You won individual awards at Texas. Like, but the pivot was good for you. Right. Because you were willing to, when no one else was looking, to transcribe an interview. You were willing to go and be a gaffer or a person carrying the bags for the production team for a shoot. You're willing to work live events. Like, you were willing to do the little things. And, you know, this portion of the show, as we wrap, we always like to talk about advice, and you've given a lot of great advice, but we're going to go like a little two-piece special right here. I wish that this was sponsored by a by a certain company. But so advice to younger you and aspiring creatives, content broadcasters slash analysts slash reporters. So if you're looking back to say, what's one solid piece of information that that you would give your younger self to prepare you for, you know, to get to where you are now? And also realizing that that is probably someone who's listening to this podcast right now.
So, advice to younger Serenity. I would say keep that same fire and resilience that you had when you first started. Don't lose, and I don't think that I have, but don't lose track of the end goal and the main point of why you got into this. You want to continue to tell the stories for athletes. Give them a space to tell it. I understand that, you know, things will get hard along the way. You know, you'll be in Wisconsin. You'll get fired from your last station. You know, like, you'll have these things. But just keep the same resilience and keep the main thing the main thing. That's the advice I have for younger Serenity. Now, advice I have for aspiring journalists or aspiring broadcasters, content creators. One, start now. I used to wait a lot. I used to constantly, and it was Andy Hall, who was the executive producer at Longhorn Network. I think that was her last name.
Shout out to Andy.
Right. Shout out to Andy. She told me to start. And I was like, I don't have a camera. She was like, you have your phone. And you have access to every Andy Wall. Right. You have access to athletes all around you. And this is the advice I give my mentees as well. You have everything you need already. Even outside of the athletes, you know, you are on a campus. I have literally went and gotten a poster board and asked my question from a poster board and sat there. And that video has gone viral. It's still going viral. So even if, like, make a way out of no way, that would be my advice to aspiring sports journalists. Because you think that you need a company. You think that you need to get hired. You need something to show now. Get those reps in. Yeah, get those reps in, man. Because, like, you think that you need... I always thought that I needed a whole setup. I need a whole production setup. You really don't.
You don't.
You literally... And also, I actually got re-inspired by this. Because this was advice to me, too. I got re-inspired by this. And I put this on my story the other day. You never know who's coming to you for information. I hit a wall kind of recently, just not really posting as much as I should have. And I kind of, like, you know, I left my track fans behind on my TikTok, because I'm like, they see it on Flow Track. They see it on ESPN. They see it already on those other platforms. Until it was one of my teammates. Crazy enough, it was one of my teammates who said, I don't follow any, because he doesn't run track anymore. He's like, I don't follow any track. He said, I had no idea. I was talking about something. I'm like, dang, yeah, did you see that? I don't know what it was. Did you see that one thing? Who pulled out of the meet? And he's like, no, I don't see track at all anymore on my timeline. And that blew my mind. He said, the only way I see it is when you post about it. Blew my mind, because here is a track athlete who ran track with me at Texas. And and they don't see those things. I talked to my parents about it. They don't see what I see. Their timeline is completely different from mine. Just because that video has a million views, is a million sports fanatics on a completely different part of the world than you think. And you think, well, because this went viral, everybody saw it. No,
right.
That's not true. So I started to realize, and this came from multiple of my friends, which I keep you know, hammering, they ran track. So I'm like, what do y'all mean y'all didn't see this? They said, we literally don't know about these meets if you don't post about it. And that's when I, you know, I got back on my Zoom. You know, I got back on my feet and was like, I need to talk about these things a lot more. Because I did get in a slump where I was like, nobody's coming to me for this. They're going to go to they're going to the pages that have 100,000 followers. Why would y'all come to me about it? You know, it's old news by then. They're like, no, we know through you. So remember that. And that was something that was just so jarring for me. Because like I said, I'm thinking because I see it, everybody sees it. I had to explain to my mom who Drake May was. You think because Drake May has 3 million followers, my mom knows who that man is. No. She does not know who that man is. She's going to know who that man is if I make a TikTok video about who he is. So I would just take that as advice, as in you never know who your audience is. So make the content when you think that nobody's listening. I would say like that's some of my main advice for sure. Some advice I'm still trying to follow.
Yeah, that's great advice, because I'm going to clip that at right there, because I think that's a great ending point. But the amount of students that I was just telling a young lady that she's a recent grad of the other Texas university. And she's a designer. I was like, hey, you don't have to wait until you get a job to like build your portfolio.
Right.
Like it used to be where you had to, you know, had to have the opportunity to be able to put stuff together. Now you can find photos on stuff. You can build a deck. Now don't go and build something as if you created this yourself.
Right.
Like, or you took this photo. But if you can manipulate something, especially in the design world, or I would always tell young ladies that were interning with me, if you don't go to the game, it's fine. But you have access to the footage and you can go and build a package without that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait on it. Like, just create it, especially when you have your hands, like you can put your hands on it. So like, all the footage that you had access to at LHN or at Texas,
right,
or all the people that you had, like you could probably do a whole season of a podcast by just going through your phone. Okay, I'm going to call this person. I'm going to call this person. I'm going to call this person. They're going to say yes because it's you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, literally, you have access to all of these people. And so if it's Tara, you know, she has X amount of followers. Okay, we're going to do this podcast. I'm starting this podcast. And this da-da-da-da. Okay, cool. I'll be on it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to put out the content, the shorts. You're going to hit her followers and your followers.
Literally.
And it's going to go, and it's going to hit.
Literally.
So there's no excuse.
Yeah. It's like, it's literally like making lemonade with one lemon. If that's what you have to do,
a whole pitcher of lemonade.
Right. Literally. But I only have one lemon. Child, you better ration. Like, there are ways. Absolutely. Like, I mean, my credential got denied to go to world championships. There's limited, and that's okay. They don't let content creators. I mean, I wasn't under a company. So I was like, I'm going to go live every single day of world championships for track.
Yep.
And Tara just randomly hopped in on the live. As soon as Tara joined the live, we had 1,000 people in the live. Yep. And all I'm doing is just talking about, I was just recapping every day. I was waking up at, you know, 2 a.m. to watch it because it's overseas in Tokyo. And I realized my friends were coming to me for the people who were, you know, they work 9-to-5 jobs. They're like, we got a recap through your lives, because we are not waking up at 2 a.m. to watch it, you know? And it was like, use what you have and use your platform, and the people will come. The people will absolutely come.
I love it. Well, Serenity, thank you for, you know, the quick turnaround, accepting, like, yeah, I could do it tomorrow. I could do it today. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for being a part of this as we celebrate Black creatives during Black History Month.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to let you know that I'm extremely proud of you and all of the work that I've watched from the shadows to kind of see your meteoric rise to what you are now. And I know that you're not even close to where you're going to be. Like you know, it's like running the 400 where, you know, you see someone out of the blocks and you're like, oh, okay, this isn't the 100-meter dash. Like seeing you like on this marathon of a race in different phases in track terms, phases of the race. Like it is a beautiful thing to watch, and I'm proud and I am honored to have been a small piece of, you know, of your story to even be an acquaintance. So
no, thank you.
Keep going. Don't give up and keep putting out great content.
I'm gonna keep on going. Thank you for even asking me to join. Of course. Nobody asked the reporter about themselves. Well, never get a chance to talk about it. So I appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.